This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 204. This week, I am very pleased to be joined by a returning guest from the One Wrestling Podcast. Hello, TJ.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Pretty good. What's been up with you? Anything big? I mean,
say it was my birthday this past weekend.
Oh,
so
happy birthday.
Thanks. Unfortunately, couldn't go out and do anything special, really, but got to go visit my in-laws for a minute because they got vaccinated. Lucky them. I'm still waiting for that.
Yeah, I got my second one last Monday, so I'm pretty happy.
Philly's rollout of this thing is a total mess. I don't even want to get into it, but I'll get vaccinated eventually. But yeah, I got to go visit them at least and see the new dog they bought, or not bought, but rescued, I should say. But so that's pretty much all I did this past weekend, and watch wrestling because I basically took the whole week off the past week since probably like Monday. I mean, I watched Dynamite, but other than that, I haven't watched wrestling until yesterday.
Oh wow, so you had a lot to catch up with.
Yeah, I'm really behind in New Japan Cup other than the show we're going to talk about.
It's been a really good tournament, but you know, this one was not really that great, but the rest of the tournament's been really good. But yeah, it's funny you bring up your birthday. Like, my birthday is May 1st, which I feel like is just going to be, like, just too early to do anything, basically. So, like, I just feel like I'm vaccinated. I know a few other people who are vaccinated, but most of my friends and, you know, my girlfriend Nicole and everybody are not yet vaccinated. So I feel like it'll just be a little bit too early to do any kind of birthday party. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, say, this is my second COVID birthday because my birthday hit right after everything got shut down.
Yeah.
It was like the day before my birthday is when like Mark was telling us we're going to be going home for a while.
Yeah.
And it's been a year now. So
I mean, the people in like through March through like June, I think, or maybe March through May are going to be the ones who get screwed with two COVID birthdays. Because I think obviously if you were before this, you had your one COVID birthday already. And then if you're after this, like, I think starting in June, probably, people are going to be able to start, like, having, at least outdoor birthday parties for sure, I think.
So, yeah.
So, if not indoor, if you're vaccinated and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's rough being a March, April, and I think probably even May birthday. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to lose two of them, but what are you going to do? Are you a hockey fan at all, TJ? I don't know. I never asked you that before, I don't think.
Not really. I don't really watch sports that much. Okay. Honestly, like I follow like football and like soccer, but beyond that, a little bit of like I'm mostly in like college basketball and stuff like that. But I don't really watch sports that often. It's more just following scores and stuff.
There you go. Well, hockey and baseball are like the only two sports I really watch. And the hockey world got big news in the past week with the NHL returning to ESPN, which I get wanted to mention because it's pretty cool. It's one of these things where like I didn't realize how much I would be excited until it happened, I guess, because, you know, just on its like on its face, I'm like, oh yeah, NHL return to ESPN, that's kind of cool. But once they start playing that old school NHL National Hockey Night theme song, and like all the nostalgia from my childhood when the NHL was on ESPN kicks in. It's like, oh yeah, this is pretty awesome actually. So I'm excited to see the NHL return to ESPN. I thought Rich and Joe did a pretty good job covering this on the flagship this past week for two guys who are like haven't watched hockey since like, I don't know, 1995 or something. So, but yeah, I just wanted to mention that because I am excited. And I'm going to a hockey game on Wednesday, actually. So that'll be my first one in a very, very long time. But that's like the first real, that's the first, I guess, vaccinated privilege thing I'm doing. Is my friend actually got two tickets to the Ranger game against the Flyers, and they require you to buy two tickets, I guess, as a minimum, because they're trying to make some money back after, you know, all these COVID shit. Yeah. I think it's only 2,000 capacity right now in MSG, so not that many people. But you have to buy two tickets, and, you know, he basically had to buy these two tickets, but, you know, most of his friends are not vaccinated yet, so it was like, hey, I know you got vaccinated. Do you want to go? And I was like, you know what? That sounds awesome. So, but I still had to go get I had to get the PCR test on Sunday because the state of New York requires you to get a test before you go to the game. So it was kind of a pain in the ass. Like, you have to find this, like, MSG teamed up with a specific clinic that guarantees you'll get your results in exactly 3 days because they have to be done 3 days out from the game. But, like, obviously the results have to be back before you go to your game, and like all the, like, there's a million local clinics around me that I could have walked to that are offering, you know, PCR tests, but they all say 3 to 5 days. So it's like, well, okay, the 3 days would have been fine, but then I'm really rolling the dice if it's 4 or 5 days, then you know, I can't get in. So I had to go to this like one specific, like, you know, walk-in health clinic that's like, it was like a 15-minute Uber right away and like over in Queens. So kind of pain in the ass. What are you gonna do? It's worth it, I guess, just to get out of the house. And I imagine at some point they'll just like take proof of vaccination instead of making you get the test still, but they haven't done that yet. So, but that'll be exciting. I think that's my first live hockey game in like even like two seasons. I don't think I went even before COVID started. Just like one of these things where like I feel like after this shit is finally over, people are going to, like, want to do all sorts of stuff that they weren't doing even before COVID started. Just because it's like, just fucking get me out of my house and let me do anything at this point. Like, I don't know. I just feel like everybody's going to be like, yes, I'll do anything. Or even stuff I didn't really think of that much before COVID. You know, I just want to, you know, I have the desire to do it all of a sudden after being locked in my house for over a fucking year.
Yeah, so I'm definitely ready to go and do stuff. I'm like, it hasn't bothered me as much as that seems like a lot of other people are, like, staying stuck in your house, because that's kind of what I pretty much always did. I barely went out, really. But I'm definitely ready to go do some stuff, go to some wrestling shows finally. I'm really excited to actually go to a normal gym instead of like this little tiny one in my apartment.
Yeah, just anything really. I started planning out my Japan trip for this year, just like, you know, really in like the ultimate optimism, I guess, because it's like, obviously I don't know if I'm gonna be able to go. Like, the plan was to go for Wrestle Kingdom finally in December, and, you know, hopefully I can go, but it shocked me if I can't. No, especially because they're not opening for the fucking Olympics, which I kind of figured they would. But you know, it's just like, you know, so, but I started planning out those dates anyway, because it's like, you know, I want to at least pretend I'm going, you know, but like, or have that optimism that hopefully I can go. But, you know, if I can't go, I can't go. I'll just, you know, maybe hopefully I can go in like April 2022 or something. Go for cherry blossom season again. But I'm hoping I can go for Wrestle Kingdom finally, because it seems pretty cool. I've never done it. Somehow I've gone 3 times and never gone for a Wrestle Kingdom. So just feels like one of these things I should finally do. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of like, it's one of these things I'm planning because I want to plan like I'm going to go. But on the other hand, I'm not particularly hopeful with the news that they're not like allowing any foreign fans for the Olympics. Cause like, I kind of had in my head, like, okay, well, if the Olympics happen, then that will be their impetus to open. But the Olympics are happening and they're not going to open. So I don't know. Like, at that point, it seems like, well, I don't know, you know, they might just wait like a really long time to reopen it to any kind of tourism then. So
Yes, I'll be curious because I haven't really been keeping up with like the vaccination rollout in Japan.
It's
but
been horrendous.
I feel like at least the U.S. Yeah,
it's been horrendous in Japan. They've vaccinated like 30,000 people so far.
Oh wow, yeah. That's nothing.
Yeah. So if everyone's hoping for the end of clap crowds anytime soon, you got a long time to go. I think, unfortunately. But yeah,
I feel like at least to the U.S. we'll be able to travel out of the country potentially here by the end of the year. It's just,
you think,
will other countries be good enough to let us in, I guess?
Yeah, you'd think if they want to, like, I mean, if they want to do some kind of program where you have to be vaccinated to get in, it's fine with me. And I got my vaccine card here. I'm like, look, let me in. All this shit, like, I have the Pfizer vaccine, which, like, there's all this new shit out that, like, people with that vaccine can't even spread it asymptomatically. It's like it reduces even asymptomatic infections by 94%.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so you know, I don't know, it just seems like, you know, I'm vaccinated, I have lots of money to spend after not doing anything for the last year. Do you want me to come and spend some money in your country? Come on. But yeah, we'll see, I guess. But yeah, so we're here to talk about three shows today. The New Japan Cup Night 9, the All Japan Dream Power Series, Korakuen from March 14th, New Japan Cup from March 15th, All Japan Korakuen from March 14th, and DDT Daydream Believer also from March 14th. Some good wrestling over the weekend, I will say. Some really good stuff on all three of these shows. Actually, not so much the New Japan show, but the other New Japan Cup shows lately have been really good. This is probably like the weakest in a while. But the All Japan, the DDT shows both had some really strong stuff that we will get into here. But let's kick off with the New Japan Cup Night 9, March 15th. And this is where I should mention, again, if you're not a Omakase patron, I am doing daily coverage of the New Japan Cup shows. So this week alone, I did daily shows for patrons on Tuesday, Wednesday, there was a day off in here somewhere. I don't remember what the day off was. It might have been Tuesday, actually. Yeah, so like I did daily shows on the Patreon on Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday, I believe. I should have looked this up first. But yeah, so I did a lot of daily shows, is the point. Yeah, so March 9th. Okay, so the one day off is Friday. So I did Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. A lot of Patreon exclusive audio, you know, daily coverage covering all the New Japan Cup tournament matches in detail. Some really good stuff. You know, the match everybody's going crazy about right now, the Ospreay Zack Sabre Jr. match, which was from yesterday's show, the March 14th, the Sunday March 14th show. You know, I like that match a lot. I went 4.25 stars on it. I did not go 5 stars on it, though, which I've seen a lot of people going on it, and I think there's a couple reasons why it's not really a 5-star match of the year level match, in my opinion. So if you want to hear those, I guess, hot takes, because it seems like a lot of people are going 5 stars on it, you can hear them right now at patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. And again, all the audio from this week is up there, all the first round stuff, second round stuff, you know, basically every New Japan Cup show that we don't talk about on the free feed. Because we did night 3 last week, and we're doing night 9 here right now, obviously. It's all on the Patreon. We'll be continuing it all week long. I believe there's what? Before the finals, I think there's still 4 more shows, right? Yeah, the quarterfinals, or 3 more shows. So 2 quarterfinal shows and a semifinals. So we'll be covering all of that on the Patreon this week. So yes, definitely check out patreon.com/wrestlingomakase. And only $5, you get all your daily New Japan Cup audio. You can hear my top 10 matches of the tournament so far. A ton of other stuff, so definitely check that out. And we're doing coverage of the New Japan Cup Pick'em, because we did, of course, our own Wrestling Omakase Pick'em, which got 58 entries. So I've been updating the standings of all that each day, and you know who people picked, because it is really entertaining seeing who people... you know, how many people thought who was going to win this match or that match. So, you know, we'll update that again after we get through these tournament matches here. But yeah, I'm close to winning, actually. I'm only 2 points behind the current leader. So we'll get into that. Did you do any kind of pick'em this year, TJ, in any of these contests? I know you didn't do it in mine.
No, I sat this year out. I mean, I wasn't super excited about the tournament, to be honest. Yeah. Like, that's, from what I've seen, I've enjoyed. It's just, yeah. And I didn't really have any idea really who was going to win. I kind of have some ideas now.
It's going to be Shingo.
Going in, I was, that's kind of where I'm leaning to. I think he's at least going
to
be in the final.
That new theme song is a giveaway to me. The theme song remix, when he came out with that against Okada, it's like, oh yeah, he's winning this match, and he's winning this whole tournament probably. But, and it keeps up with the Kota Ibushi runs through LIJ thing. So,
yeah,
it's going
to
be,
like, even before anything happened, that's kind of who I was leaning towards anyway, just because they seem to be setting up the match like a couple months ago anyway. Yeah.
I mean, to me, like, you know, Shingo, I could see Ospreay. You know, those are like the two, and I kind of think that's going to be the final, but I guess we'll see. But yes, so the show here, the March 15th show from Cork and Hall, it opened up, or the main event, actually, we'll start at the top and work our way down, was Jay White defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi in 1954 with the Blade Runner to move on to the quarterfinals. Tanahashi, you know, gets that bye out of the first round for being never champion and then loses in his first match. I don't know about this match. This match was pretty disappointing for me. I mean, I went 3.5 stars on it. Jay White, he just really has not been clicking with me since returning, you know, from his little, you know, self-imposed exile after Wrestle Kingdom. Like, I sort of agree with the critique I've seen around that, like, you know, he feels like he's stuck in neutral, and it feels like he should be past this already. Like, the Kota Ibushi loss was the culmination of this character, and now it just kind of feels like we're just retelling the same story. And I don't know, his heat segments lately, like, I really didn't like it against Tanare. Here it was a little better, maybe, but it just felt kind of endless. And, you know, it just, he really hasn't been landing with me a ton in this area lately. You know, the finishing sequence, like, it leads to a decent back and forth finishing sequence, but, like, it just didn't feel, you know, worth the amount of time it took to get there, especially since it was kind of short by you know, big New Japan match finishing sequence standards. You know, the finish was pretty clever, with Jay White countering the Dragon Screw attempt straight into the Blade Runner. He basically, like, doesn't go down for the Dragon Screw and just, like, lifts Tanahashi straight up and hits the Blade Runner off of that. And it's a 100% clean win, which I feel like he needed at this point, because the Gato stuff was starting to get pretty excessive with him. But, you know, it's just like, I don't know. I just didn't love this. It was good, but it really, like, you know, to give a context for this tournament, I mean, I have, you know, out of 22 matches, this match ranks 13th for me. I mean, it doesn't even touch my top 10. And there's been a lot of really good stuff in this tournament. I mean, 7 matches at 4 stars or better, and then another 4 matches at 3.75. I mean, it's been a really good tournament so far, I think. And this match was well below a lot of it. So just, you know, just really kind of disappointing for these two guys. You know, there's always been a pairing I've enjoyed in the past. You know, they've had some really good matches, like the match they had when Tanahashi returned from his injury at the Best of Super Junior Finals in 2019. That was pretty awesome. The match they had for the briefcase in 2018 in King of Pro Wrestling was great. I mean, this was probably better than that Wrestle Kingdom match they had when Jay first came back with the character. But other than that, I don't think it was really, like, you know, one of their better matches or anything. I don't know. What'd you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I definitely see where you're coming from. Like, honestly, like, didn't feel quite like a Corkin main event, really. It felt like something on, like, some random house show. Like, if this had happened on, like, this show where like Ospreay and Zach happened at a little like a smaller venue.
The post match, to me, the big thing here was, you know, Jay White's been saying, you know, he's gonna win the tournament and split up the titles again if he beats Kota, which, you know, I don't think he's gonna win the tournament anyway. But he did mention that Tanahashi should hand him the NEVER title to add to his collection of belts after he wins the tournament. And that, to me, was like a little bit of an early build to indicate they're probably going to do a Tanahashi versus White NEVER title match off of this for one of the 500 shows coming up after a New Japan Cup. So maybe that's why this wasn't great or anything. Maybe they're holding something back for that. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if this is a, I don't know. It could be Sakura Genesis. It wouldn't shock me if it was like one of the Dontaku nights or something. I mean, they have a million shows they got a headline. So I mean, there's two Duntaku nights and there's two other nights in Kagoshima that are like titled shows. You know, kind of like the Hinokunis used to be, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. Yeah, they're trying to elevate the belt. Yeah, they're trying to elevate the belt, but it does feel, I agree with you that it feels really weird to have Jay White be like, yeah, the never title. I'm like, well, okay. That's a little, but yeah, I mean, the belt is supposed to be the number two belt now, like you said. The semi-main event, also in the New Japan Cup second round, David Finlay defeats Yoshihashi in 13-12 with the acid drop to advance to the quarterfinals. This was good. I mean, you know, it was maybe a little better than I expected to be. It's not anything like it's going to blow your mind or anything like that. I mean, it was pretty dull early on. Just like, you know, these two guys, especially early, they don't have like the fan interest, I guess, to like just draw people into their match, you know, just from the start. And like, it did feel kind of like, you know, just watching two guys go through the motions and just do moves for a little bit. But, you know, just felt like it took a while to get out of first gear. But the intensity really picked up when we got like a big physical elbow exchange, some hard chops, and, you know, Yoshihashi like did this big roar and gave this great kneeling super kick and a somewhat out of control Liger bomb, but where he like looked like he was going to drop him, but like it kind of worked and made it look cool. So that's fine. And that got a two count. That was like right before the 10-minute call. Unfortunately, he went right from that to the butterfly lock, which that move sucked so bad. But it wasn't the finish. And they had a really hot finishing stretch. A lot of close near falls. Finlay, especially, I thought did a really good job during this sequence, selling that he was on his last legs and, you know, didn't have much left in the tank. And the finish where he got this great spinning stunner counter to counter Yoshihashi's like signature brainbuster thing he does, and then immediately followed up with the acid drop of the pin. Was really cool, I thought. And, you know, it got good enough by the end that I went 3.5 on this as well, even though I thought it was pretty boring early on, like I said. But, you know, they really turned it on by the end and had a pretty fun match. And it sets up Finlay versus Jay White in the quarterfinals, which is, you know, a pairing they haven't done in a while, but it used to be a, you know, it's kind of that young lion feud going way back, so.
Yoshihashi get knocked out already because he I've been enjoying him a lot the past year, so. But yeah, I was interested to see if Finlay was gonna randomly show up with the Impact tag titles since they won them over the weekend. I was curious if they packed them up in their suitcases or not.
The Finlay and Jay White thing, so White is 10-1 against him, but they haven't wrestled since their U.S. title match all the way back on April 24th, 2018. That was your last singles match, so that'll be interesting to see, you know, these two guys used to meet all the time, face off for the first time in, you know, almost 3 years, so that'll be pretty cool. So yes, those are your two tournament matches. We'll go quickly through the undercard here. Match 3 was Sanada, Shingo, and Bushi beating Yuji Nagata, Hiroki Goto, and Ryusuke Taguchi. Sanada pinned Taguchi in 6:26 with the O'Connor Bridge. I didn't love this one. I mean, it was pretty short anyway. You know, it ended via that cradle exchange. Taguchi and Sanada were just like, you know, like I said, exchanging the cradles, and Sanada came out on top at the end. But, you know, not much else to it to me. I went like 2.5 stars. It was all right.
Yeah, Matt didn't really like Marble on Fire or anything, but it felt like they were just trying to rush through everything and get out and get in and out as quick as possible. Like, I kind of enjoyed the Taguchi and Sonata stuff at the end, but it was them exchanging pinfalls attempts, so it wasn't in cradle, so it wasn't a whole lot of anything, but at least there's a positive about the match for me.
Match 2 was the United Empire, Will Ospreay, Jeff Cobb, and Great Okan beating the Dangerous Techers and Kanemaru. Cobb pinning Kanemaru in 7:10 with the Tour of the Islands. It was nice of the United Empire to even show up for this match after Taichi destroyed their whole life, basically, in that backstage promo he did a couple nights ago. He basically said they're the lamest units out of all the many units in wrestling history. Like, he was like, oh, wrestling has had so many units, in the entire course of its history, and you guys might be the lamest of all time. And he's like, I don't even understand what your theme is. I don't know what you're trying to do. It's just a really just like he buried them. It was like, okay. But yeah, I mean, that was just a really kind of funny promo. And Taichi ran wild with choking on everyone on the Empire team. I was worried for a second he was going to choke Bea Priestley too when she got up on the apron, but thankfully she ran away. I was not ready for that discourse if that had happened.
He definitely tried to.
He didn't even act like he was about to. He just kind of like walked menacingly towards her, and she like ran for the hill. So I'm like, you know what? Good. I'm glad we didn't do that spot. Thank you. And Cobb deadlifted Kanemaru up for the Tour of the Islands straight up from the mat. That was pretty cool. But I thought this match was just fine. Nothing that special. You know, 2¾. None of these matches had a ton of time because they're rushing through this. You know, they have to rush through these whole Korakuens because of the, you know, the state emergency curfew is still going. But yeah, I mean, this show started at 6 and then, you know, they have to be done by 8 basically. But, you know, I think DDT ran long actually on their last one thinking about it. But, you know, I don't know what the punishment is if you run long, but clearly New Japan's trying not to. But yeah, that was, not a ton to say about it besides, you know, the Taichi stuff. And I guess it sounded like in a backstage promo yesterday that the Techers are going to go back to challenging for the tag titles soon. So I guess we're getting another Techers GOD match, which, you know, I love the Dangerous Techers, but I can't say even I'm that excited about that.
Yeah, so I was really hoping for a Okan-Taichi match coming out of this because I thought they had some good interactions in this match, even if it was like short-lived, and them getting like in each other's faces after the match. And I kind of thought the finish was going to be like things like Kanemaru did this like spinning DDT on Cobb, and I thought with all the gifts I've been seeing of Cobb doing all this like basically juggling Wato, I thought that was gonna be the finish because I figured he's gonna like catch Kanemaru and hit the Tour of the Islands. But I do think that, like, the finish of like deadlifting him off the mat and then hitting it was a little bit better than that. But yeah, not a it was fine.
And the opener was the team of Minoru Suzuki, El Desperado, and Doki defeating Kenta, Taiji Ishimori, and Jado. Desperado pinning Jado in 8:02 with the numero dos. You know, the big things here, it looks like Suzuki and Kenta still very much have a feud going, judging by their backstage comments lately. They went really hard at each other with a strike exchange at one point, and you know, they got into each other's faces after the match as well. So clearly not going to finish off with that New Japan Cup match. Going to keep this feud going. And I thought this was a... No, Desperado tapped Jado out. Duh, the numero dos is his submission finisher. But yeah, this was a fun and energetic opening brawl. Definitely the highlight of the undercard for me. I think part of it is like Bullet Club versus Suzuki-Goon, at least. Because, like, you know, obviously Bullet Club has been... kind of drive me crazy on some of these past shows, but like Bullet Club versus Suzuki-Goon still feels at least kind of fresh because they really avoided that pairing for a long time. Even though both units have been around for a while, it feels like last year was like, you know, late last year was the first time they really even did any feuds with that, or, you know, at least the first time in a very long time. I mean, I remember they briefly did like Killer Elite Squad against Carl Anderson, Doc Gallows. They had a Wrestle Kingdom tag title match, I think. But for the most part, they really avoided, you know, those two units facing each other as the two big heel units. And now, as we've talked about a million times, with United Empire kind of becoming the new second heel unit, you know, Suzuki-Goon's in much more of a neutral position now. You know, so they're able to feud, I guess, more at Bullet Club and stuff. So yeah, that still feels kind of fresh as opposed to, you know, Bullet Club versus Hontai Chaos, the fucking... really, which is really the same thing at this point, or even Bullet Club versus LIJ, which has been fucking, you know, run to the ground over the years too. But yeah, I went 3 stars on this. This was pretty fun.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty fun too. Jado didn't move too bad, even though he can't walk, but I thought he moved pretty well in this match compared to like Honma, for example. But yeah, it was just a fun little opener, and not sure I'm in love with the idea of, it seems like Ishimori is challenging for the junior title, because, I mean, it'll probably be a right match, but I'm not exactly thrilled about that. But I'm definitely excited for another Suzuki and Kenta match, even though I haven't seen the New Japan Cup match yet, so good. I don't know if that was any good or not. But
yeah,
Sounds like sounds like a good pairing.
What rating I gave it? I think I gave it 3.75. Yeah, so it was really good. 3.75. You know, and it felt like they left something on the table too, where, you know, they can do another match. So yeah, that'll do it, I guess, for New Japan. Not a ton to talk about in this show, honestly. You know, like I said, the New Japan Cup's been really good if you haven't been watching it, but this was probably one of the weakest nights of the entire tournament. So, I mean, it was still two good matches, so it's not like, you know, it was a bad show or anything, but, like, you know, compared to some of the other nights, I mean, you know, there's been, like, really high-end stuff in this tournament, and, you know, neither of these matches was really at that level.
I say, at least with the fact that all these shows basically took place in the same weekend, I am happy that this is, like, one of the shorter New Japan Cup shows. Because, like, all the matches were pretty slim.
So coming up this week, and again, all of this can be, you can hear our daily coverage of all this on the Wrestling Omakase Patreon, patreon.com/WrestlingOmakase. So tomorrow it starts the quarterfinals, Evil versus Toriano, and Shingo Takagi versus Kenta, which... I talked about this a lot on the Patreon. This is not only their first ever singles match, it's their third meeting, period. They've only ever met twice in their entire careers. It's kind of crazy. The GHC Junior Tag Title match with Dragon Gate in 2008, which is obviously a long time ago. And then in their entire time together in New Japan so far, they've met in one 10-minute tag from World Tag League 2019, when it was Shingo and El Terrible against Kenta and Yujiro Takahashi. So yeah, definitely a fresh matchup here. You know, they've somehow managed not even to face each other in these undercard tags all this time, which I don't even understand how that's possible in this company. But that's what Cage Match says, so.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's tomorrow, so, you know. And Thursday in Shizuoka is the other half of the quarterfinals. Will Ospreay versus Sonata and David Finlay versus Jay White. Saturday in Sendai has the semifinals. The winner of Evil Yano against the winner of Shingo Kenta, and the Ospreay Sonata winner against the Finlay White winner. So all three of those shows, again, covered on the Patreon at patreon.com/WrestlingOmakase. And then the finals will be next Sunday, March 21st. That we will cover back here on the free Omakase. So we'll cover the finals next week. Looking at the Omakase pick'ems, let's see what people predict for these quarterfinals. So the first two... you know, so we have 58 people that entered. 31 of them chose Evil. 0 have chosen Toriano to move on to the semifinals. And the remaining 27 had picked somebody, you know, who was already eliminated to get through this quarter of the bracket. And then very similar in the other quarterfinal on that side of the bracket, 37 people picked Shingo Takagi. 0 picked Kenta to move on to the semifinals. And, you know, the remaining 21 had picked someone else. To get out of this quarter of the bracket. The other quarterfinals here, also very one-sided. 49 people pick Will Ospreay, 5 pick Sonata, and again, the remaining 4 would have gone with somebody else. And 48 people pick Jay White to get out of this quarterfinal, 0 pick David Finlay. So, you know, not if there's any upsets in those three matches, nobody's getting points for it in my pick'em. The only one, you know, there's some people who think Sonata will get past Ospreay, and, you know, those people will have a lot of... a big bit of an advantage against everybody else. But yeah, Jay White, I mean, those four are the same four I picked. Honestly, I picked White, Ospreay, Evil, and Shingo. And then, you know, I have Shingo beating Evil and Ospreay beating White. And then I have the Ospreay and Shingo final with Shingo winning. So we'll have to see what happens. As far as the standings go, Chris Samsa, who was on here last week, he is leading our pick'ems with 30 points. I believe the most points you could have right now. So he got all 16 matches in the first round right, or 14 matches plus the two buys, and he got 7 out of 8 of the second round. So, you know, the most points you could have is 32 points. So he only got one match wrong. So congrats to Chris. He's done really well through the first two rounds. And then there's a few people with 29 points. It looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 people with 29 points right behind him. And then 2 more people with 28 points, yours truly. And also Sean Sidor from Voices of Wrestling. They are also right behind. So those are, you know, the people who are very much in the mix here. A lot of other people, a few other people with 27 points, you know, 26, 25. And then really gets down to the basement here. where my buddy Aaron has had 4 points this entire time. He got four matches, or he got two matches right in the first round, and that's all he got. And he hasn't gotten any right in the second round. I guess it's hard to get anything right in the second round when you only got two matches right in the first round. But yes, Aaron, I think you got last place sewn up there, buddy. I assume when he did that bad, he must have done it on purpose, but who knows. And then second to last place, the English young boy announcer Mavs Gillis with 14 points. He only got 10 matches right in the first round and two right in the second round. So, yeah, that's bringing up the rear. And in third to last place, August Baker from Voices of Wrestling. So a star-studded bottom of the bracket here. And August has 15 points. So there you go. And, of course, the prize is a free month of the Omakase Patreon. So if you do win this bracket, if you do win the pick'em, if you're already a patron, you just get your $5 back for 1 month. And if you're not a patron, you get your $5 back once you sign up. So that's pretty much how it'll go. We'll see who gets the inaugural crown in the Wrestling Omakase New Japan Cup Bracket Challenge. All right, let's move over to All Japan Pro Wrestling. They had a Korakuen show on Sunday, March 14th, in their Dream Power Series. So this was like the second televised night, I believe, of the tour. Could have been the third, maybe. But the big thing here to me is obviously the brand new heel unit, the Total Eclipse unit, which is basically Jake Lee and Tajiri, along with all the Enfants, except for obviously... I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden. Shotaro Ashino, of course. And, Ashino looked really good and pissed off here, so that was good. But also, like, this was my first time seeing the Total Eclipse gear, which they debuted a few shows ago on, a Shinkiba show I didn't watch, and the Total Eclipse music, and that was really great. And, just a really, really great start, I think, for Total Eclipse. And, you have an awesome main event here, as we're going to get into in a second. Along with, some really cool stuff on the undercard with, Total Eclipse, getting started here and looking pretty hot. And yeah, All Japan, to me, the headline for All Japan here is they've really pulled this thing out of the ditch. I mean, I'm not ready to say they're having some kind of new fucking boom period or anything, but like, the second half of 2020, I gave up on them in like November. I was so fucking sick of that promotion. I think a lot of people, judging by, the stuff that came in my Omakase year-end awards and stuff. I mean, they were, like, the number two, like, negative promotion when it came to, like, worst promotion and all that stuff to WWE. And obviously nobody was catching WWE in any of those negative awards. But, like, yeah, they were the other promotion that people, really had a lot of negative feelings on, at the end of 2020. And I think for good reason. I think, people were really, whether it's Tsuji Ishikawa or Tajiri or both of them, people are really fed up with the booking in this company. And I don't know, it feels like one change of that, you can't really say like one big change of that level cures everything that's wrong with the company, but like it really has helped a ton. I mean, and Jake Lee looks great as a top heel. I mean, he looks like the kind of thing he was born to do, honestly. It makes them look silly that they didn't really try this before. And, Ashino looks great as a pissed off babyface, and just it's the kind of thing where like sometimes a double turn can really solve a lot of a promotion's problems, and I think that was very much the case here. I don't know, do you have any thoughts, TJ, before we get into the show?
Yeah, I was one of the people that voted for All Japan in your awards for like worst promotion of the year, but I think I was the one we were talking about it on that episode of the year end awards. I was saying it wasn't like actually the worst one; it's just the one that pissed me off the most because they had like won me over during the no people era, like when there was no fans. Their TV was
the
amazing.
First half of their year, and then was good, and that's what you're talking about with the no fan stuff. It was like when the fans came back, the fucking promotion fell off a cliff.
Yeah, pretty much. But I think that, like you said, I think they've had a strong start to the year, even without like the Total Eclipse shit. I think they started off the year with some really strong Korakuens, and then with this Jake Lee turn, it just added some fire that the promotion really needed. There's other stuff too. Like, I think turning Purple Haze not into like mid card heels and actually kind of being like top end heels and having like not being all cheating and stuff all the time. It was like them just being ass kickers. Like, they cheat a little bit, but it's not as bad as like first half of 2020 when they first debuted, and I just wanted to not see them really at all whenever they were on my screen, but now they're like one of my favorite factions in the promotion. But I love this turn for Jake Lee. Like, again, Fonz is like one of my favorite stables, so I'm sad to see them kind of done now. And I don't have as high hopes for Oshino as you do. I think he's kind of basically Goto now. He's just not going to do a whole lot. Like, hopefully I'm wrong, but I don't have high hopes for him. But for the rest of the Enfance guys and for Jake Lee especially, I think this is going to help all of them a lot. Hopefully they actually go with him at the end of this. But right now, I think they're doing everything right with this faction. Yeah,
Reinvigorated. So, I mean, that's really how it comes down to it. I think I'm glad you brought up Purple Haze, because it's like, having this new unit that's clearly like the heels of the company has really let Purple Haze kind of pull back a little bit and be more like, you know, in the role of like a neutral style unit, or, you know, just less heelish. And, you know, I think it fits them better. So, you know, I think doing this, like having a new strong heel group, since they clearly were not willing to go all the way with Enfance for whatever reason, you know, really has just made everything else in the promotion kind of fall into place and feel, you know, much more solid. So we'll start the main event, which was the All Japan World Tag Team title match. Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi beating Zeus and Shigehiro Irie. Yuma gets the referee stoppage on Zeus in 21:30 with the end game. That is their second defense of the World Tag Team titles. This was awesome. I mean, the only, I guess, complaint I would have, the big complaint, would be I thought the initial heat segment on Aoyagi was pretty goddamn dull. But, like, once Miyahara first tags in, which I don't think takes that long, the match really picks up quite a bit from there. And Irie does this enormous beast bomber at one point that just, like, was one of my highlights of the match, at least in the, I don't know exactly what it was, but it was one of the highlights of the match before the finishing stretch, at least. And, you know, Aoyagi, you know, he got the end game on Zeus pretty early on, I guess, but Zeus and Irie, you know, got out of it, and like, or Irie helped him get out of it. They were double teaming Aoyagi. Zeus got his, you know, fucking chin lock of death on Aoyagi, but Kento makes a save with his big blackout knee out of nowhere to Zeus from behind. And then Irie comes out of nowhere and like takes out Kento with this insane crossbody while Kento is sitting on the apron, just sends both of them absolutely flying. And that leaves Zeus with Aoyagi, but Aoyagi hits this like DDT out of nowhere, gets the end game back on. Zeus escapes for the suplex, and then Irie comes flying in off camera with a huge splash on Aoyagi as soon as he lands from the suplex, which is a great spot. And then Zeus hits this huge short arm lariat for a two count, goes for the jackhammer. Aoyagi drops down behind him, hits a big German, followed by a kneeling super kick. Zeus, though, basically no-sells it, goes for a choke slam, but Aoyagi fights him out with his signature kick. I can never remember the name of his kick, I don't know. Whatever it's called, he almost gets the pin off of it. And Irie then hits a huge cannonball on Yuma in the corner, and they double-team him with this, like, it was a really strange, just, I don't know if I loved how it, you know, landed, but it was certainly unique. It was like a choke slam electric chair drop combo, and it's kind of a move where, like, I don't really know if the hand around the throat and the quote choke slam actually added anything to the move. So, you know, I don't know if it was like the greatest move of all time or anything, but at least they're trying something new, you know, whatever. And then Zeus hits the biceps explosion lariat, which is all time great name. Aoyagi kicks out at 2.9999 just before the 20-minute call. And then Zeus hits a huge second lariat, and I thought Aoyagi was done at this point, but he fucking kicks out at 2 again somehow. And then Aoyagi suddenly rolls through on Zeus, gets the end game locked in again, and again, shocked me watching this live. That was the finish. Zeus passes out. We get the referee stoppage. Huge win for Aoyagi, and just like the finishing sequence being so awesome, you know, put this one over the top for me to go 4.25. And capped off what, like I said, what I thought was a pretty great show by the end of it.
Yeah, I'll say, I love this match so much. I'm loving this current run for Yuma. Pretty much ever since last year's Real World Tag League, like them pairing him back up with Kento, like you'd think that would be a bad thing for him, but I think it's really been elevating him, because he's pretty much been the star of this team, in my opinion. Like, Kento's a really good hot tag for all these matches, but I think they've kind of put Yuma front and center in majority of these tag matches. And even his title match against Suwama earlier this year. Like, another thing that's looking up for All Japan, I think, is that they're kind of going with Yuma a little bit too. Not kind of more like not as front and center as Jake Lee, obviously, but I think he's kind of starting to elevate himself a little bit. I think I could definitely see him being like if Jake actually does beat Suwama for the title, I could definitely see Kent or Yuma being like a defense later on in the reign, maybe as a heater, because for the inevitable Kento Jake match, because obviously they got to run that if they ever put the title on Jake. But yeah, same things that we were saying about Purple Haze before we even talked about the match. They're so much better as a team when they're doing just shit like this. Like, Irie's, like you mentioned, him like doing that crossbody on the apron to Kento. I yelled out when that happened. That was amazing. Like, Irie was really, I don't know what to say about it, but yeah, so this match just definitely better than I expected it to be, and I still thought it was going to end up being great anyway.
The thing about Yuma, like you said, he's totally the star of this team, just like you said he was, and you know, they've really done a good job bringing him along again as a babyface. You know, and you know, I saw a lot of people be very skeptical when they put these two back together, and I get it, because you know, he had turned on the guy and all that, but it really does, you know, he's gotten off to a great start this year. I don't know if he's going to win the Triple Crown title or anything anytime soon, but you know, the crowd seems like they're getting really behind him here. But yeah, so that's that was a great main event. The semi-main event, did not like nearly as much. Yoshitatsu and Osamu Nishimura beat Suwama and Hikaru Sato. Yoshitatsu pinning Sato in 14-18. So Gerard, who's been on the show before, he's like the All Japan Voices of Wrestling reviewer, loved this match, and I don't really know what he was watching, honestly. I mean, I just, shout out to Gerard, he's a great dude, but I don't, like, when I saw him say he thought this match was awesome, I was like, I thought this was fine, I guess. I mean, I thought Nishimura, you know, getting worked over for a while was, you know, perfectly fine, but also pretty dull. And, like, Yoshitatsu just got his ass beat by both Suwama and Sato in a way that made him look like just the biggest dork. And he's, you know, obviously challenging for the title next week, which, I mean, you could say, well, there's no way to make him look like a good challenger anyway. But, like, yeah, I mean, you know, he obviously, I think everybody knows he's going to lose to Suwama in Kyoto next Sunday, March 21st. But, you know, this match did not do him any favors in my book. You know, he got his little comeback on both guys, pinned Sato, but I still didn't think he looked like any kind of hot challenger or anything. So I went 2.5 stars. I thought it was pretty boring most of the way. Didn't pick up until right before the ending. So, eh.
I'll say, yeah, this honestly was kind of boring. To be honest, like, I was just waiting for it at the end. But I got to give Yoshitatsu credit for, like, teaming up with, like, the most random guys as part as, like, his Yoshitatsu Kingdom shit. Because it was, like, last Korakuen that he was teaming up with. I think he was teaming up with Nishimura still. But he had, like, Balion Aki in it, too. It was, like, he's just choosing some random people to team up with. But yeah, the sooner we can get this title challenge out of the way and get Champions Carnival started,
I mean,
the
I think
better,
everybody's
really.
Kind of looking forward to Champion Carnival, and you know, I think people want to see this Jake Lee push happen and win the belt, and it's like, oh yeah, we have to do a Yoshitatsu title challenge first. It's like, okay. Speaking of,
I'm at least happy it's someone that's not in Champions Carnival challenging before.
Cool, I guess.
So
speaking of Jake Lee, it was Jake Lee and Yusuke Kodama beating Shotaro Ashino and Koji Iwamoto in 11:26, Lee getting the pinfall on Iwamoto. So the pre-match video package features Jake Lee backstage right after the Ashino turn, saying that, you know, I assume he meant what happened to, you know, Ashino, was, quote, justice. I think he said absolute justice. And I was like, you know, Seigi, which is justice. And it's like, how very evil of him. Because obviously that's what Evil has been saying pretty much since he turned heel, is like everything is justice. But yeah, the other Total Eclipse members all came out here with Lee and Kodama. And, you know, this was, again, they debuted these new tights a few, like a week or so ago. But, you know, this is my first time seeing them. And Lee's new black and silver Total Eclipse tights are pretty awesome. I mean, those are some cool fucking tights. I don't know if you feel any differently, but
I liked his old gear, to be honest. Like, if they just kept the same style and just made it black, I probably would have liked it better. Like, they're fine, but I definitely kind of prefer, like, the whole shorts with, like, the slits on them.
This match, you know, I thought this was good. Ashino, he did this big German suplex to Kodama off the apron onto the other Total Eclipse members. That was awesome. And Iwamoto was, like, hanging with Lee for a little while. He even got a close near fall off his own German suplex. But then Lee was like, okay, I'm done with this guy. And, like, took over these running knee attacks. A very, like, Nakamura-esque running knee to the back of the neck. And he points at the sky. I guess that's where the Eclipse is. And that's where he's pointing at the sky now, like he's Sabu or something. He gives Iwamoto a very delayed brainbuster. Like, really hangs him up there forever. And then gives him the brainbuster. And that's the pin. And he almost forgets to cross his arms first. I guess that's going to be a signature pin. He, like, remembered at the last second. But yeah, that was kind of funny. But yeah, this was a fun coming out party, I thought, for Lee and Kodama. I like they won clean as a sheet, because I was kind of worried when the other Total Eclipse members came out with them that they would need their help to win or something. But, you know, Lee looked dominant here, and, you know, Ashino got his little moments to shine, and, you know, even Iwamoto got to look, you know, kind of good against Lee at the end, but then Lee put him away, so without much trouble. Yeah, I went 3.5 stars. Definitely a good start here for Total Eclipse.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Yeah, like you said, I think it was a good start for Eclipse. I think it was just a good look to see how each guy handled the betrayals. Like, Ashino's, like, viciousness against Kodama was great. Like, he's really great at emoting and conveying just how angry he was at Kodama for betraying him. And I decided to look it up and see, like, when was the last time Kodama and Ashino, like, actually faced off in a ring, not as teammates. And it was, like, back in 2017, right before Enfants formed, when Sego and Ashino were facing off with him a few times before Kodama betrayed them. Betrayed New Era to join Ashino. But yeah, that's a nice thing just to see, definitely a fresh matchup for Ashino. But maybe it's kind of just my Enfants fandom a little bit, but I felt like those two expressed the betrayal a little bit better than Jake and Iwamoto did. But they kind of, at the same time, they both kind of did it a little differently, since Jake felt more like he was just kind of toying with Iwamoto and eventually, like, letting Iwamoto get his anger out at him for a little bit, and then offering him to rejoin, because at that Shinkiba show you didn't watch, he did offer Iwamoto a chance to rejoin him and join Eclipse, but Iwamoto basically said no, and was, I think, backstage was saying that he was gonna answer him at the Korakuen Hall show, which his answer was to take his hand and judo throw him. So didn't work out for that, didn't get to join them. But I guess after that, Jake just was just like, fine, if you're not gonna join me, and then just, like, pretty much destroyed him. So that was really good. But
afterwards,
and yeah, I love that as a new
afterwards
finisher
for he Jake, like, to continue the theme of, like, being very vicious towards Iwamoto, he stuffed the mouth guard, like, down his tights, to the, I was like, I don't know, just kind of, like, taunting him, like, yeah, we knocked this out of your mouth, buddy. The only thing I don't like about the act so far is the very long pointing at the sky he's been doing. Like, he did it again after the match, and it's like, I don't know, it looks kind of goofy to me, but I would kind of, like, modify that or drop that. I mean, maybe it works for him because he's such a, like, you know, a stoic guy, and that's kind of why I thought the heel turn would work in general. But yeah, just a little too much, like, pointing at the sky to me. Just maybe cut back on that a little bit. And he had a big stare down with Ashino afterwards, but they didn't jump him or anything, which I kind of thought they were going to. But
yeah, it seems like they're gonna. He's gonna try and do, like, the not like the classy heel kind of thing. Like, I don't think he's gonna, like, really be like. I don't think Total Eclipse is gonna be really cheating a whole lot. I think it's just gonna be they're going to beat you. And if when they beat you, they're right, which is the whole thing he's going for, is like, if we get results, it's justice kind of thing.
Match number three, again, Total Eclipse, Kuma Arashi, Koji Doi, Hokuto Omori, and Tajiri beating Shuji Ishikawa, Takao Omori, Black Monster Ray, and Ryuki Honda. Doi pinning Honda in 9:30 with a lariat. So they use the theme song in match four too, but this, obviously watching the show in order, this was my first time hearing the new Total Eclipse theme song. I love their theme song. I mean, it's like this big, like, spooky and evil theme song. It sounds like it came out of a fucking Castlevania game or something. It absolutely rules. I really love this theme song. I don't know if you have a ton of thoughts on it, but I thought that theme song was awesome.
Oh, I loved it. But I couldn't tell. Like, I think the song that Jake and Kodama came out with, it was a little bit different. Like, it still started the same way. Maybe that's, like, a little hook for the themes. But I don't know. Maybe I was just hearing things, but it kind of sounded like the one that Tajiri and them came out with is like the unit theme, and then Jake has kind of like a different remix version of it. Maybe I was just hearing things, but it's not a different. Either way, it sounds awesome. Like, it sounds like some like Castlevania shit or something.
But yeah, it is like the Castlevania thing is what I thought of immediately. It was like, wow, that's kind of cool. And they had a logo like immediately, so you could tell that this was in the works for a while. You know, they first started teasing the Ashino stuff like what, in January, right? So they must have known this was the plan all along. But yeah, Ishikawa and Doi, they had a pretty fun little like big dude exchange, I thought, that ended with Shuji hitting the giant knee on him, which left both guys down. And then Total Eclipse like were picking on Honda, and they gave him this cool all four members lift up the guy from the arms and legs on each side of him and drop him spot. And then Doi gave him this a hard lariat against the ropes, a spine buster, a big spine buster, and then finally another lariat for the pin. Great start, I thought, for the new heel unit. They look great here. Match was a ton of fun. I went 3.25. You know, just not quite long enough to go higher, but definitely a fun match here.
Yes, I really like match two, and I like that like former Infants, now Eclipse, kind of feel like bigger threats. They don't feel like the more cartoonish heels that they Infants were post June last year. Maybe then they feel a little more reinvigorated, it seemed like, in the match. Maybe it's just that they know the company's behind them now. But I did love the Doi and Shuji stuff, like solo stuff in the middle of the match. And I really like Doi picking up the win here because it feels like he's like the clear number two guy in Eclipse. So it's good to see them like building him up a little bit, especially since he's going to be in Champions Carnival this year for the first time.
He seems like he's going to be an early beneficiary. And you know, they've continued to do a really good job bringing Hokuto Omori along. I mean, he's a guy that, like, you know, it felt weird to me the first time, obviously, he turned and joined up with all these Wrestle 1 guys. But now, like, you know, the unit's even more, you know, has Tajiri and Jake Lee in it too now. And he fits in it more, you know, better than ever. And he's just, I don't know, this kid's just a natural heel. So, you know, and he was like he was the guy who, like, I talked about this, I think, when we reviewed that show. Like, he was the guy who, you know, basically initiated the whole turn. I mean, he like low blowed Ashino, I think. So, you know, I don't think that was by accident. I think they really have a lot of plans for him, probably. So,
yeah, I think before the big turn, him and Hokuto and Ashino were kind of like fighting a little bit, and then even like Ashino and Kuma. But like with the actual turn, it was like basically Doi and Kuma let Ashino get pinned, and then Hokuto did the low blow. So it's kind of a group effort, but Hokuto is definitely like the one
that,
who really
if people
hadn't
seen the angle, by the way, they played a video clip of it, I think before match four. It was a great angle. Like the way Jake Lee just stands there and like looks at them and just doesn't make any move. And like you could tell, when I was watching that show live, I'm like, oh shit, he's in on this. But they didn't make it super obvious. He was just standing there like with a very like emotionless expression. And then he just suddenly just starts joining in, starts stomping on him. And then Iwamoto gets mad, is like, what the fuck is your problem? And, you know, Jake doesn't just, like, go after him right away. Like, you know, Iwamoto keeps pushing him, and finally Jake is like, you know what, fuck this guy. And it just, like, elbows him right in the face. Just a great turn. And then, you know, he even has a little bit of comedy at the end where Tajiri's like, you know, looks around. He's like, I'm sorry, I want to stay with Jake Lee. And gives, like, a little, like, prayer hands to Iwamoto and runs off with Jake and the Enfance guys. So just a great turn.
Yeah, Tajiri's reaction to that was great. And I know a lot of people. I know the people complain about DeJerry being involved in this because, of course, the Booker guy has to book himself with like the hottest angle in the promotion. But if we're tying this back into Infants, at least especially they pretty much always had like a older guy with them. In West One, it was Kenichiro Arai. Well, Drunk Andy, then Kenichiro Arai, but same guy. But so I kind of like that kind of them keeping that on in All Japan with Tajiri now. Even if, like, I understand people's gripes with him, but
yeah,
I kind of like him in Eclipse.
He's a cool little hand to have. I don't know. I doubt he's going to be like a big focus of the unit or anything. But match number two was a three-way match. Alejandro gets the win here in 7:02 with the SOS Todo. He got the pin. That was the DET thing on Akira, basically. So I hate three-way matches. This is the kind of shit I definitely resent the Shuji Tajiri booking team for bringing into All Japan. But with that said, this was perfectly fine. You know, 2 3/4. It was all right.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty fun enough three-way. Like you said, three-ways aren't always my cup of tea, but I thought this was pretty fun. And I did really like Alejandro picking up the win here. I thought he had a pretty good performance in it. And I think him picking up the win here is good news for people like me that want to see more of Alejandro in All Japan, because I'm not sure why they'd really feel the need to give him a win if they don't want to at least do something with him. So I'm curious what that'll be if they ever actually bring him in more frequently. I mean, he's on a lot of the shows anyway, but I'd like to see him get some like a little more focus, I guess. I don't know, but I don't know what they're doing with the junior division in All Japan now that Shima has the belt.
The opener was Izanagi and Utamaro beating Dan Tamura and Ryuji Hijikata. Izanagi pinning Tamura in 7:51. I was really enjoying this for a bit. Like, it was a surprisingly fun, energetic opener, but it ended with a major botch. So you got to take up points for that with Tamura, like, botching the double bridge. They went for it again and then almost got it, but then Tamura slipped at the end when he was supposed to schoolboy Izanagi. So I don't know. I went 2 3/4 instead of 3 stars, basically. I enjoyed it, though. I mean, you know, it was a fine little opener besides the fact that they fucked up at the end.
Yeah, like I said, it was a fine opener, and really the main takeaway was that they fucked up the ending, went for it again, and then kind of saved it, but not really.
Overall, I thought this was a great show. Awesome main event. Nothing that'll, like, fucking, you know, fill up your notebook on the undercard, but everything was fun, and all the Total Eclipse stuff is, like, you know, they just feel like such a fresh unit that, you know, that really, like, carried the undercard for me. I mean, these All Japan undercards never blow you away, really, but, like, you know, with the Total Eclipse stuff, I think it felt like this was this undercard had more, you know, more stuff to it, you know, more like stuff to sink your teeth into, even though the matches weren't like blow away or anything like that. So, but anything to add about All Japan before we move on?
Not a whole lot. It definitely, I think if you gave up on All Japan last year, I think for now, I'm cautiously optimistic. That's a good time to jump in, but I'm just half expecting them to just say lol and have Kento win the Champions Carnival again and beat Suwama, because it's an Ode Award. They're assuming that's where the title match is going to end up being, since they're doing that for the first time in like 8 years, I think, in May. So it would be very All Japan booking just to have Kento win Champions Carnival and beat Suwama in Ode Award, since he's the golden boy. But I'm hoping it's Jake. But either way, even if that isn't Jake, I think this Total Eclipse unit's definitely lit a fire under All Japan a little bit. And like I said, I think it's at least making the undercard a little bit more
exciting.
Coming up
in All Japan, so first of all, Thursday, March 18th, the first one-match show in All Japan Pro Wrestling history. Shinkiba First Ring, already sold out for this one-match show. This is Shuji Ishikawa challenging Jun Kazai for the Gaora TV title in a glass board and barbed wire board and TLC death match. So there you go. Jun Kazai's second defense here. I will definitely be tuning in for that one.
Yeah, so I can't wait for that. I like the little preview tag they had on the last Korakuen. It was like with Kasai and Tomio Harada versus, I think it was Honda and Shuji. Yeah, that was really fun. So I'm really excited for this death match, because when's the last time Shuji's even been in a death match? It's definitely been a while.
He was Big Japan Deathmatch champion, I think, 2012? Let's look this up. I think it's 2012 or something like that. And, you know, he retired from the deathmatch division after that. So I don't know if he's done a single one since that. He may have done like one or two here or there. Let's see. When did he hold the deathmatch title? Okay, it was close. 2013. So he held the deathmatch title January 2nd, 2013 through November 4th, 2013. So that was his big deathmatch run. That's where most of the scars you see on his body come from, that 1 year in the deathmatch division. But yeah, he has not done deathmatches in a long time. So that'll be interesting. The next big show is, well, big show in quotation marks. Next Sunday from the Kyoto KBS Hall, the Dream Power Series, March 21st. Your main event, obviously, Suwama making his seventh defense of the Triple Crown title against Yoshitatsu. That will be what it will be, I guess. And Shima defending the junior title against Izanagi. You know, that could be pretty good, I guess. I mean, I can't say I'm like counting down the days for an Izanagi title defense or anything, but or title challenge, I should say, and I doubt he's gonna win, but you know, we'll have to wait and see, I guess. It's really hard to find. I was trying to like look up and see if when he's gotten a title shot or anything. He might have gotten one as Atsushi Maruyama before, but let's see. See if we can see if Izanagi got any title shots in All Japan before for the World Jute.
I was trying to think if he challenged Yuamoto in that last frame, but I don't think he did.
So he challenged Susumu Yokosuka. That's right. March 23rd, 2020. That match only went 8.5 minutes. And I think that's his only title challenge in history. No, he challenged Atsushi Aoki when he was Atsushi Maruyama at the time in 2018. And he challenged Tajiri in 2017. So he's had a bunch of title challenges. So this will be his fourth title challenge, and he's never... obviously never won the belt, so I don't think the fourth time will be the charm for him, but who knows.
I'm just curious what the involvement with like Shima and Stronghearts are going to be now that they've signed with Great.
The rest of the card, a singles match with Francesco Akira and Yusuke Kodama. We have, let's see, Shuji Ishikawa, Takao Omori, and Black Mensa Ray against the team of Shitaro Ashino, Dan Tamura, and is that Hikaru Sato? I don't know who that is. Mitsuru Sato? Is it just a... okay, it's probably just a mistranslation.
It's probably Sato.
A mistranslation. And then there's an A-man tag with Kento, both the Aoyagi brothers and Rising Hayato, against Total Eclipse, Jake Lee, Tajiri, Hokuto Omori, and Kuma Arashi. So, yes, there you go. That's the... I could just search the kanji. Let's see who that is. Yeah, it is Hikaru Sato. I don't know why they mistranslated his name in the auto-translator. But, yeah. So, that's your March 21st KBS Hall show. You know, nothing, like looks incredible or anything, but we are going to cover it next week because I'm into the All Japan right now. But that's, like, their last big show before... you know, before the Champion Carnival. There's another show at Saitama on March 28th. Really nothing of note on that show. And then the Champion Carnival gets kicked off in April. I believe April, let's see the date. On April 11th. Oh, that's 2020. Why do they have this calendar goes all the way back. April 9th. So Friday, April 9th is when the Champion Carnival kicks off, and we will have daily audio coverage of that on the Wrestling Omakase Patreon throughout the month of April. So, you know, definitely a tournament I'm excited to cover. Hopefully it's a lot better than last year's Champion Carnival, which fucking sucked. I mean, I'd be pretty surprised if it wasn't, but we'll have to wait and see.
Like the single block tournament's going to help it a lot, too.
So let's go over now to DDT, our last topic for this week. This is the DDT March 14th Korakuen, the Daydream Believer 2021. Some big pre-show announcements, first of all. Really only two, actually. But so the inaugural Ultimate Tag League 2021 opens on May 9th on Korakuen, and the finals are May 27th at Shinjuku Face. I can't say I was dying for another round-robin league in Japanese wrestling, but... you know, I'm willing to see what this is like. This one we will not be covering in daily coverage on the Omakase Patreon, because I do enough of those already, and they always make me want to die. So we'll stick with King of DDT and DO for the Omakase Patreon schedule. But yes, another tag league. Are you excited, TJ?
It'll be fun to watch. Probably won't watch it like every time, like as soon as it airs or anything like that, but I'm always down for some tournaments, and I'm curious what teams are going to be in it, to be honest, because I mean, there are a couple like standby teams, but I'm sure they'll throw together some random stuff, especially with like All Out just breaking up. So there could be some new,
we have a new trainee,
potential teams.
Yuya Koroko will debut on April 11th at Corican Hall, 23 years old, from Chiba. His background is in baseball, karate, and amateur wrestling, and he's trained at the Animal Hamaguchi Gym. So that's exciting. Also, want to give a plug, by the way, for all these translations to the, as we always do, the DDT English Update account. Although I think it's now DDT Tokyo Joshi English Update account. But yeah, it's DDT Pro _ENG. So shout out to Mr. Haku and the account over there. But yeah, so that's a new trainee. That's pretty cool. Have to wait and see. You know, he debuts next month at Korakuen. So a fun thing to open the show. So 10 years ago, right after the Great Tohoku Earthquake, you know, Japan was like trying to conserve energy nationally, and you know, DDT, they did their first show post disaster, and like, you know, they cut out the Tron and did the whole opening video live with like, you know, these wrestlers like piling into the ring to you know, like basically do a live rendition of like of the pre-show graphics. And you know, obviously that earthquake was a terrible tragedy, and Japan has been doing a lot of stuff to try to, commemorate the tragedy, you know, never forget kind of thing. And it's one of these things where I'm sure it must feel weird for people to commemorate that kind of tragedy when we're in the middle of an ongoing, you know, crisis. But like, it's cool they did this, and the DDT wrestlers had a great time with it, coming in the ring and like all getting each other's faces and while they're being announced. So that was pretty cool, and a really cool thing to do, you know, to commemorate what, like I said, what was a terrible tragedy. So let's start at the main event here and work our way down. And what a main event we're starting with here. The DDT Universal title, Yuki Ueno defeats Yusuke Okada with the WR in 2001, his fourth defense. This match was fucking awesome. Like, I feel like a broken record on this show at this point, but Yuki Ueno is the most underrated wrestler in the entire world. I mean, he goes out here and has nothing but outstanding matches for this Universal title every time he gets in the ring. He was great before this title reign when he was in Natalya's too with, you know, God, why am I blanking on his name? The big dude. Thank you. Naomi Yoshimura is currently
Naomi
out
Yoshimura.
Injured. I was thinking like big and orange. Those are two things that were coming away, but a name was not coming. but yeah, when he was in the Natalya's team with Naomi Yoshimura, you know, they had outstanding matches as a tag team. And ever since that team had to break up, unfortunately, because of Yoshimura, you know, needing time off to heal his neck. I mean, Ueno has been incredible here in this Universal title, right? I mean, this guy, you know, if more people watch DDT, people will be talking about this guy as like one of the great young wrestlers in all of wrestling. I mean, he's up there. I mean, he's like one of the best anywhere, not just in DDT. And, you know, this guy is only 25 years old and he's already this good. He just turned 25 in September. He's not even like about to turn 26. And yeah, I mean, Okada's great. I think a lot of people know that already because, you know, Yusuke Okada was in All Japan and, you know, people were kind of like, are they ever going to push this guy? Like, what are they doing? And, you know, it turned out that, of course, he was leaving the company at the end of the year. And that's why they had, like, so heavily de-pushed him last year. But yeah, these two guys, they just, you know, two young dudes here who really just went out there and, you know, they put on a show here. I mean, you know, they just let it all hang out. They just threw themselves all over this ring with reckless abandon. Every cliche you can come up with, they did it all. You know, there was like this one late match exchange where like Ueno was going for some kind of, or late match example, I should say. Ueno was going for some kind of like standing senton into the corner with Okada just standing there. And Okada moves and Ueno, like, he doesn't slow himself down. He doesn't like prepare himself to take this bump. He just absolutely nails this turnbuckle pad crotch first at top fucking speed. It looks so brutal, and it led immediately with the two of them being out on the apron, where Okada gave him this big German suplex, you know, out there. And yeah, I mean, that's that whole little sequence was like just a great example of how they just went out there and they were just going a mile a minute and just like, you know, doing everything they could here to have an amazing match. And Okada, you know, got this whole string of big moves after that for near falls. He did this big fisherman's brainbuster hold that Ueno just barely kicked out of, which got like a big shocked reaction from the crowd. They clearly thought that was it. And Ueno comes back with this absolutely batshit Rana from inside the ring to Okada standing on the apron that Okada takes this insane bump for. The noise as he hits the mat was just like incredible. Just like, I don't know, just smacked the fucking mat on the outside. And that ends up being the turning point. Ueno hits a few more moves back in the ring and finally gets the pin. This was fucking awesome. I mean, really spectacular. I went 4.5 stars. I think this was better than Zack and Ospreay, which people are, you know, praising more heavily from the same weekend. I was already thinking 4.25 at least until that fucking insane Rana spot right at the end. And I think that basically was like where, okay, I'm giving this match 4.5 stars. I mean, just a crazy last spot that really took this one over the top for me. And I think it just barely edges out Endo Akiyama, which I also gave 4.5, you know, for my DDT match of the year so far. And Ueno, you know, he is, you know, Jamie, who of course runs the Dramatic DDT blog, he said it, you know, before in the Voice of Wrestling Discord that Ueno is the DDT MVP at the moment. I don't even think it's close. I mean, he is an incredible, incredible wrestler. And this was an incredible match. If you don't normally watch DDT, if you didn't see this match, make sure you go out everywhere to see it. This was so awesome.
Yeah, I'll say it was an incredible main event, and I'll one-up you and just say you need to watch like all of Ueno's title matches with this belt, because like I was not in love with this belt from like the when it started, because it was basically all Chris and Sasaki with their endless feud, and then finally Ueno wins this belt, and it's this great match after great match, and I think this is like the best match of his reign so far, and like I said, probably the DDT match of the year for me right now. The only other match I can think of that I'd really compare it is the Eruption versus Sonic Club from Kawasaki Strong. I think it was called, no, it wasn't Kawasaki Strong. It was sometime last month. I can't remember what show it was on, but that those two are probably like the front runners for like my DDT match of the year. And yeah, I don't know, man. It's incredible. Ueno's on this just amazing run. He's pretty much going to be the man I think about with this belt for the future until someone else eventually one-ups him if they are able to. And I don't know what they're like why they're dragging their heels with signing Okada, but they need to get him under contract immediately, because I got, maybe it's financial reasons, I don't really know, but the dude doesn't work anywhere else except for DDT, so I don't know why they won't just put the pen to paper for him, because he's been on an incredible run in DDT since he showed up. And yeah, so this is definitely like one of the best matches I've seen in the past couple weeks, at least. Off the top of my head, the only one I can think of in comparison would be the Kaito Ishida and Shun Skywalker Dreamgate match from Dragon Gate
at the same level last week, Okada and Shingo in the New Japan Cup, which was also almost as good. But I don't know, it might have been better. Those two are really, really close. I mean, they're both 4.5 star matches. But yeah, you know, this has been just a really hell of a run here for Yuki Ueno. And you know, he's a guy that, like, if you don't watch DDT, you got to pay more attention, because he is so fucking good. The semi-main event was for the KOD six-man tag team titles. The team of Tetsuya Endo, Soma Takao, and Yuji Hino defeat the Young Communication Generation, Akito, Kazuki Hirata, and Shota. Soma pinned Shota with the running elbow butt in 13:07, so that makes Damnation the 43rd six-man tag team champions. They failed in V3 here, the other team, I should say. But yeah, this was good. I mean, it wasn't like the two matches on either side of it, I think, were more spectacular, even though I don't know if I love the extreme title matches we'll get into in a second. But, you know, this match, the big thing in the pre-match, Kazuki Hirata comes out wearing his six-man and eight-man tag title belts, like, both around his waist, one on top of each other, like a true Chad. That was so awesome. But yeah, there was, like, this... there was this like, pretty funny spot where, like, you know, Hirata, he thinks he has Yuji Hino on the ropes after a lot of help from both his teammates, and he tries to hit the title match bomber on him, but Hino tags out to Endo, who, like, leaps into the ring off the top rope and just, like, lands on his feet in front of him, like, you know, hello. It's just kind of like, it was kind of funny, like just Endo leaning right, because they had a lot of history too. It's like, you know, Endo doesn't like him. But yeah, Hirota did finally get the title match bomber out of nowhere. And Endo takes this fucking awesome flip bump for it. That's like almost a thing of art. I rewound that bump like 5 times. It was just an incredible flip bump by Tetsuya Endo. And Soma ends up getting the pin pretty much out of nowhere on Shota with his big running elbow. Definitely wasn't expecting that. And I thought this was fun. I went 3.5 stars. Good match.
Yeah, that was a pretty good match.
Really? I
kinda
was
surprised
Damn
Nation won.
I think
to be honest, like, I kind of expected like Akito and them.
But I don't know.
I don't know. I was kind of expecting them to at least have a little bit of a longer run. But I mean, it's 6-man titles. They can pretty much change whenever. Because I've really been enjoying this Akito, Harada, Shota team. But yeah, the theme of the match felt like it was like them trying to figure out how to deal with Hino. Because that's kind of been, honestly, it's been the kind of the theme of like all of Hino's matches since he joined DDT, is it's like these guys trying to figure out what they can even do to this guy to beat him. And I loved, like you mentioned with Harada thinking he had Hino on the ropes and then fucking it up because he took too long and Hino was able to tag out. I love that. But yeah, it was a pretty good match. I kind of, like I said, I'm just really just surprised Damnation won, but we'll see. I'm curious who's going to beat them now, because yeah, I don't know who they're going to have that can handle Hino.
Match 4 is for the DDT Extreme title, a barbed wire casket death match. Chris Brooks defeats Shuma Katsumata by casket burial in 14:10. So Shuma fails in a second defense, and Brooks becomes the 51st Extreme Champion. Of course, this was Joker Shuma, and the casket seemed to have Lego pieces glued to the side of it, which was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, this match, you know, had lots of crazy spots. I mean, Shuma, you know, set Brooks up with, like, he tried to set him up with some kind of, like, crazy, like, chair contraption, and, like, tried to suplex him off the top rope onto it, but, like, you know, Brooks, like, ends up stopping him, or he tried to, like, do a splash off the top, you know, through the contraption, but Brooks got up and stopped him and hit this, like, big, like, swinging suplex off the apron under a chair pile. That looked pretty nasty. Shuma did a Death Valley driver on Brooks off the apron through a barbed wire board set up between two tables. That looked nasty for both of them. And you could see where Brooks' back was all bloody from the barbed wire. There were like actual tacks instead of Legos and the normal, like, in the Lego set, which was again, nasty stuff they did in all the tacks and stuff. But like when, you know, Brooks goes to stuff Shuma in the casket and suddenly two Joker druids showed up, clearly Takeshita and Mao. That was, you know, I get it. This is supposed to be goofy anyway, but like they're doing all this like thumbtacks and like barbed wire shit, and then all of a sudden we have Joker druids. It seems just kind of, I don't know, like it's DDT, so I shouldn't be surprised, but like the shift in tone didn't really work for me there. And, you know, they distracted Brooks so Shuma could low blow him. And then, like, we have, like I said, Joker druids, but then he puts tacks in his mouth and super kicks him. It's like, okay. Like, it just seemed a little, like, tonally off there or something. And then Shuma, like, he invited the Joker druids in the ring, and then he essentially just used them to balance himself and hit this weird swinging DDT off the second rope. It didn't even look like he needed the druids to balance himself. It looked like he could have just climbed up the second rope by himself. But the actual DDT, I think it was supposed to look cooler than it did. It just kind of landed pretty awkwardly right next to the ladder. And Shuma, you know, the finish was, like, really goofy. But, like, you know, he basically, like, tried to set up, you know, Brooks for some kind of flying splash with Brooks' head on the lid of the casket. But Brooks moves out of the way, pulls the lid with him. So Shuma just fucking falls right in the casket, and Brooks slams the lid on for the win. And it's like, after all that, that was the fucking finish. Like, you go through barbed wire and all this shit, and the finish was like, whoopsie daisy, are you laying in the casket? Okay. It was like, I don't know. It was a cute finish, but like too cute by half. But this still had a lot of sick bumps, fun garbage spots. I don't know. I went 3.5 stars. Really didn't know how to rate this. It was goofy. It was fun. Had a lot of crazy bumps, had a lot of weird shit and stupid shit. So I just slapped 3.5 on it and moved on with my day.
Yeah, so I really like this match, but I was coming in here for like really stupid spots, and they delivered in that. And like you, I didn't love the whole Joker Druid thing, mostly just because it didn't feel like they even did anything. Like I didn't even see them. I didn't even see Shuma like do the low blow, so I didn't know that's why they were just distracting him for. And then whatever that DDT spot with them, like basically like assisting him. I don't know. I think it would have been better if they just had Takeshita and Mao come out. Like, they were already the ones carrying out the casket before the match. I think he would have got the same thing across of them being in the Joker makeup. That was the whole reason they were doing it, just to show Takeshita and Mao in Joker paint. So they could have just done that with them carrying the coffin. But I don't know. I enjoyed it a lot. I definitely prefer Chris in, like, this style of, like, goofy match and doing stupid spots rather than him trying to do, like, big epic matches. So... hopefully, I'm not exactly thrilled with him winning the title. Well, one, because I thought I would like to see Shuma have a longer reign, but also because I don't really love Chris singles matches that much. But at least with the Extreme title, it's going to be gimmick matches, so I'll probably enjoy them more than his Universal title run. Because really, the only thing on that run I really enjoyed that much was his like hardcore
afterward,
match with
new Extreme
Drew Parker.
Champion nailed the casket shut, I guess, hoping to suffocate Joker Shuma to death. And four more druids, this time not Joker druids, just generic druids, carried the casket to the back. So there you go. I guess Joker Shuma's dead? I don't know. After the match, we find out who Takagi's partners will be for the March 28th Korakuen 8-man tag title match. And Takagi put together a team of fail sons. He put together a team of guys who have, like, not lived up to their... Actually, I don't know anything about the fucking... I don't know about Nabe Yakan. His father's like a beloved comedian from the Showa era, according to the Dramatic DDT blog. I don't know. I think he's from like what? Fucking Best Body Pro Wrestling or something, right? Yeah, and
yeah, it's like Best Body Japan. Like I didn't know what his name was or like what his deal with the company is, but I definitely recognize the shirt.
I think he's like some kind of powerlifter and also an actor, according to what I was able to Google, but like he's very short, which I guess is kind of funny. But then obviously you have Yuki Onaya, who's very very tall, so he looks funny next to Nabe Yakan. But he comes from a family of famous sumo wrestlers, and so far he's done absolutely nothing as a pro wrestler. And Chikara, who's obviously the fail son of Mitsuo Momoda and the grandson of Ricky Dozen. So. Yeah, it's Takagi and the Fail Sons, which I think was like quite the team here in that 8-man tag title match. But they're calling themselves actually Team Thoroughbred. But there you go. Takagi sworn to protect and nurture these people.
That's great.
So that's something. Match number 3, Jun Akiyama and Makoto Oishi versus Katsusada Higuchi and Yukio Sakaguchi ends in a double countout in 7:44. Obviously building up the Akiyama Higuchi KOD title match for in a couple of weeks. This was pretty good. You know, Higuchi like tried to go after Akiyama with the claw again and got his big leg sweep into the pin attempt, and you know, which he pinned him in the DO in like 2 minutes or something last time with that. But this time Oishi was there to save, and then everyone fought on the floor and we get the always disappointing double count out finish. But I thought there was a good action up until then. I'm surprised they thought Makoto Oishi, of all people, couldn't take a pinfall here, but whatever. 3 stars I went. It was pretty good. It was fine. Didn't go very long and ended very abruptly. So.
Yes, I enjoy this a lot. I do agree. Obviously, it's never good to have a double count out, and I wish this match had gone on a little bit longer, but I mean, what we did get to see, I liked how they got to the double count out, like that whole finishing sequence. But yeah, I wish I could have just had Oishi eat the fall. But and also I did love I don't know move names that well, but I know like Oishi was had a Higuchi in this submission hold, and I love that Higuchi just like used the claw to escape it. That was like probably like one of the big highlights in the actual match of it. But really, I'm very excited for this Higuchi and Akiyama match, and I think this kind of just helped me get a little more hyped for it. But as far as like a match itself, it wasn't anything special, but
two,
I enjoyed it.
Hirashima and Toru Owashi beat Daisuke Sasaki and Mad Polly, Konosuke Takeshita and Mao, and Yuki Ino and Yuki Onaya in a 4-way tag match. Hirashima pins Ino with the Somato in 8:44. This is pretty fun. Sasaki and Polly, for some reason, jumped Takeshita during his entrance. and Hiroshima and Awashi hadn't even come out yet. They like peered through the curtain when the music hit and then hurried out. That was pretty funny. Yuki Onaya, he's lost a lot of weight. Like, he almost looks like a totally different person between the weight loss and the different hair, which I thought was interesting. And yeah, Hiroshima pins Ino with the Somato after taking out Naya by essentially ramming Ino's shoulder first into his own partner. Fun little match here, all action. Nothing you gotta go out of your way to see or anything, but I went 3.25. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a fun little match. I think I really enjoy the team of Sasaki and Polly a lot more than the team of Polly and Soma, which seems to be like the default team they go to for these undercard shows. I think Sasaki and Polly's have a little better chemistry together, especially just like for comedic spots and stuff. And I did love Takeshita going to suplex Sasaki, but Sasaki like grabbed the ref, so he almost suplexed both of them. And then afterwards, Takeshita just like kind of patted the ref's head to be like, you're okay, it's okay. But I kind of didn't like that Ino ended up taking the fall here, because I don't know. I just don't know what they're going to do with him now that All Out's done. He doesn't really have any kind of direction, and he just came back, so it's not ideal, really.
The opener was the six-man tag team match I think this may have been the first ever pin for Keigo Nakamura. Did he get a pin before this, or it was just his first championship? I don't know.
This is technically his first real pin, and like, I think it was like last year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I saw that match. Yeah.
Where they switched bodies.
That's pretty great.
So that's not like, that's technically his first pin, but it's not actually his first pin. But yeah, of course, his first actual pin falls over a photo book.
But yeah, so it was the DDT Iron Man heavy metal weight title 6-man tag team match. The Young Bucks autobiography, Killing the Business, Don Shokudino and Keigo Nakamura, and they came out to the Bucks theme, which is really funny, defeated the Saki Akai photo book, Lip Hip Shake, the current champion, the champion entering this match, I should say. Saki Akai and Antonio Honda, with Nakamura pinned Lip Hip Shake with the Exquisite in 8:33 to become the 1,500th champion. Yeah! A big milestone champion, too. And he was champion for like a minute. But yes, because right after the match, Saki pinned him with the rookie award to become the 1,501st champion. Yes, so the two books started. They didn't do anything because they're fucking books. Keigo came off the top rope to try to knock one down, but they both stayed up. So Honda and Dino came in to get the books. And this was under tornado tag rules. So that was fine, I guess. And Saki and Keigo tagged in. Saki was like well in control, which makes sense, because like Keigo Nakamura looks like he weighs about as much as Saki Akai, except Saki's clearly like he looks just as skinny as her, but she has like 6 inches on him. But then Dino came in and hit her from the outside with the Bucks book, or he didn't come in the ring, he just hit her from the outside with the Bucks book to let Keigo have a fighting chance here. And then Gota Hashi ran out, armed with a spoon for some reason, to try to get his Saki photo book back, and ends up in a fight with the actual Saki Akai. And Dino takes advantage, gives her the Danshoku driver, but then knocks himself out on the top rope with the book when aiming for Honda. That made me laugh a lot. The book fell on top of him, almost pinned him. I thought it was going to be the finish. But Keigo made the save. Yes, folks, we had a false finish with a book almost pinning a man. That actually might be funnier to me than having an actual finish with a book pinning a man. And then Keigo gives the magazine a springboard moonsault. He leaps from the apron to the second rope, and I guess that's the Exquisite, and becomes the new Iron Metal Heavyweight Champion, or Iron Man Heavy Metalweight Champion. And he seems to be like having a moment with the book afterward. So a visibly disgusted Saki boots him in the face to immediately pin him for the title, which is funny. This was hilarious. I enjoyed every second.
Oh, I love this match. It's so funny. And I just love that, like I mentioned, this is like Keigo's first big win, first title win in the company, and it's over a photo book, and then he loses it because he was fucking
so
horny.
Disgusted by his horniness. She's like, I have to do something about this. Yeah, it was something. The only other match on the show was the dark match, which was Hideki Okatani beating Tori Koji with the Northern Light Suplex in 4:19. Not a ton to say about it. Very basic young boy match. Not much that made it stand out to me. So 2.5 stars or so. Very average match.
Yeah, it was a fine little title or fine little dark match. I'm just enjoying watching Kojima kind of develop on this undercard a little bit. I think he's pretty decent so far for a young boy, but I mean, it's a young boy, what's really to say about him. But I am enjoying Hideki a lot, though. Like, Okatani's been improving so much as part of Akiyama-gun. I can't really show it in here, but I just want to say that I think he's been improving a lot ever since Akiyama showed up.
That is Daydream Believer. Definitely, you know, if this is a show that, like, you know, didn't stand out to you, you know, you the listener, I mean, because there's no KOD title match on top or anything, and it was like a, you know, it's a weird month with two Korakins, which he doesn't do all the time. Definitely watch it, because especially, there's a great show in general, but the main event especially was fucking awesome. I do not miss that main event with the Waito and Okada. But yeah, good show here. Definitely enjoyed it.
Yeah, say, even if you're not like a DDT person, I definitely at least check out the main event. I think that's a match like anyone can really enjoy.
So the next show coming up in 2 weeks, like I said, in under 2 weeks now, the DDT Judgment 2020 24th anniversary show, also from Korakuen on March 28th. The main event is the KOD Openweight title, Jun Akiyama versus Katsuta Higuchi. Very much looking forward to that. We also have the 8-man tag title match I just talked about before with Shinya Aoki, Super Sasango Machine, Antonio Honda, and Kazuki Hirata against Shinshiro Takagi and his team of Fail Sons. A special DDT 24th anniversary single match, Hiroshima versus Yukio Sakaguchi. That could be really fun. And then we have the Damnation versus Sauna Club. Or I guess, are they now the 37 Kamina? That's what their name is now? Okay. It's what it says, the 30.
That's news to me.
37 Kamina are now getting going as a full-time unit. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I don't know. Yeah, that's what it says here. Well, I missed it too, so someone will have to explain that one to me. So Damnation versus the 37 Kamina. Daisuke Sasaki, Tetsuya Endo, Yuji Hino, and Mad Pauly against Kenosuke Takeshita, Yuki Ueno, Shuma Katsumata, and Mao. Match 3, Danshoku Dino, Makoto Oishi, and Saki Akai against Toru Washi, Akito, and Keigo Nakamura. Soma Takao facing Hideki Okatani in a singles match. And Chris Brooks and Tori Kojima against Yusuke Okada and Yuki Ino. So some fun stuff on that Korakuen. Definitely looking forward to that. So that's coming up on the 28th. We also already know a few matches for the April 11th Korakuen, the April Fool Show, which is Katsuta Higuchi and Yukio Sakaguchi defending the KOD tag titles against Hiroshima and Yuji Okabayashi from Big Japan. And actually, it's the only match we know. We also know Gorgeous Matsuno will have a pre-60th birthday commemorative match. Again, right now his opponent is just listed as X. And we also know Yuya Koroko will have his debut match, but he also has an X as his opponent. So that's what we know so far about April Fool. But tag title match looks cool, but don't know much else. There you go. All right, TJ, I want to get some plugs in here before we wrap things up.
You can follow me on Twitter at ASPI _. Not a whole lot of wrestling tweets, mostly like anime and gacha games, really. But
with Nicole, I just finished the first season. It's so good.
Most anime I've been watching lately is like the current season of stuff. It's like watching Higurashi, Jujutsu Kaisen.
Yeah, I'm way behind on current stuff. But Nicole wanted to watch Princess Tutu, which is like this 2002, like, it's this weird, it's like Sailor Moon meets ballet, basically. And it's really fucking good. So, if you're in the market for a 20-year-old anime, a 20-year-old shoujo, definitely check out Princess Tutu. It's a lot of fun. Although, we had to buy the fucking Blu-ray, because they only had the, for some reason, all the streaming services only had the English, which was annoying. But yeah, it's that's offense weird. People like dubs, but dubs are not for me. Not a dub person. Yeah, not a dub person.
Yes, yeah,
but yes, I'm sorry, I interrupted your plug, so go ahead and plug your podcast too.
But I also host a podcast, the One Wrestling Podcast. It's me and my wife Caitlin just talking about whatever show that week we decide to talk about and talk about news and all that kind of stuff. this week we'll be talking about two of the same shows me and John just talked about. So you can get my wife's thoughts on that, since you already kind of heard mine. But it's the DC show, DC Corkin and the All Japan Corkin. But we're also going to talk about the big Noah show from over the weekend, which had Muto doing his V1 for his Reign of Terror, as some seem to think it is. And
the VOW
junior title match and some other
Noah
stuff.
But was just popping off. People are people are very upset about the Muto title reign. It's like, I don't know. I don't really have strong feelings on it either way. So I've kind of been like avoiding the the total discourse on it, I guess. It just really it just really has not it has not grabbed me either way, I guess. Because I don't think the Muto title reign is gonna fucking save the company. I don't think it's gonna tank the company. I'm very ambivalent on it. I just really don't care that much. So people are like freaking the fuck out though.
Yeah, I think if anything, I think it's just gonna be same old, same old. I don't think it's gonna like kill the company or anything, but it's not gonna be as great as Ghost title reign, obviously, but I don't know, it's fine. And I was just surprised so many people thought Kaito was actually
football,
gonna win.
I figured he probably wasn't going to. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. Yeah.
We'll see. I think he might still be the one to beat him eventually. Just a little early for that. Unless Nosawa and Cyber Age were going to pay him a ton of money, I don't think Muto is going to go and have a V0 reign. But anyway, you know, check out our podcast. As mentioned, the One Nothing podcast. If you want to hear more stuff from me and my wife, Caitlin.
So, folks,
it for plugs for me.
You can follow us on Twitter at WrestleOmakase, Wrestling When Fit. We have the Wrestling Omakase Patreon at patreon.com/WrestlingOmakase, where you can, listen to our daily ongoing coverage of the New Japan Cup. Next week, here back on the Omakase free feed, we'll be covering three shows once again. This time it will be the New Japan Cup Finals from March 21st, the NOAH March 21st Korakuen, which has the Kano versus Ironhead. And Fujita, GHC national title match, and the All Japan March 21st Kyoto KBS Hall show that we just talked about earlier with the big Yoshitatsu title challenge. My guest will be Jerry Evans from Voices of Wrestling. She'll be coming back on, so that'll be a lot of fun. So Jerry and I will be covering those shows next week. In the meantime, folks, thank you as always for listening, and we will see you next time.